Hi, and welcome to today's meeting of Book Hoarders Anonymous. Let's all begin by introducing ourselves.
Hi, I'm Shannon, and I'm a book hoarder.
Hi, Shannon.
Hi, I'm Erin, and I'm a book hoarder.
Hi, Erin.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 28 of Book Hoarders Anonymous. I'm Erin.
And I'm Shannon.
And we are here to get you all excited about Christmas. Well, maybe not. It'll just depend. But we're here to talk about books and what we've read, and also talk about books we read in school. This month's homework, as you all know, was Silas Marner by George Eliot. Oh, goodness, I almost said Eliot George. We all know I'm paying attention today. But before we do that, we'd like to talk about what we read this month. And let's start with Shannon. What have you read this month?
All right, what have I read this month? Well, it was a dry spell because I'm not entirely sure what happened, but like starting about the 1st of November, my brain was like, well, you have read over 150 books this year. Let's do something else. Mm-hmm. And for about 3 weeks, like I have tried and tried and tried to get into the books that I like wanted to read. And I finally, I've ended up abandoning more books than I've started. Or then I finished. I got about halfway through Swan Song by Robert McCammon, which I think I talked about last time, and then basically got to this one scene in the book with the villains, and like could not get past how like ridiculous it actually was, And then I was just basically like, I left it for about 3 weeks. And then when I went back to it, it was just like, I don't even care anymore. So
I might try to read that book.
I might pick it back up again later, but I just, now not feeling it. I did read, my work has a book club that we do once a quarter, and our book club selection this time out was Codename Verity by Elizabeth Vine, I think is how it's pronounced. Even it's W-E-I-N, but it, you know, it's German. So, and it's about fighter pilots in World War II, and it's marketed as young adult, but it's a very sophisticated YA. And it was really quite good. But that's really basically been it. I've just been so right now I think I've gotten over it. So right now I'm trying to decide between about three books and I can't quite decide what I want to go with. One of them is, I want to start C.J. Cherry's Alliance Union books. I believe the first one is called Down Below Station, which I think won a Hugo Award. And it's kind of about like this major interstellar war and lots of culture shock because there are these aliens that the humans are basically kind of taking over their planet. And
oops.
Like, it's all part of this great big giant series of books that she's written. And they, like, I like it because what I've read of it so far, like, there are some really complex female characters that aren't just, you know, wholly good or wholly bad. And I feel like sometimes I've been noticing that more. It's like, you know, oh, like, the woman is, she's the heroine or she's the, like, whatever.
Right.
But the ladies in this book are pretty, are just as interesting as the men. And so I want to finish that. And I also finally downloaded the first book in Naomi Novik's Temeraire series.
Oh, those are good.
and also that's shorter than the C.J. Cherry book.
If you can stand, I think some of them are narrated by Eric Sandfold, whom I'm not a fan of. But the commercial versions are narrated by Simon Vance, who I'm just in love with.
Yeah, it looks like Bard had the Simon Vance commercial version for book number one.
Yeah, they do. And I think, like, some of them they have the commercial versions and some of them they don't for whatever reason. So, but I really enjoyed those books. They're good.
Okay.
I've read the first, I think, three. If you can get used to Victorian England and Napoleon with dragons running around... You know,
well, it kind of sounds like a more sophisticated version of like the Dragon Riders of Pern, but with like Napoleonic War stuff going on too.
Yeah, kind of. It kind of is.
So you know, I think that'll be fun. And then there's another series of books. I don't even really know what they're about, but they're by somebody named Storm Constantine, and they're on Bookshare, and they're the Rethrough Chronicles. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that right. It's like W-R-A-E-T-H-U or something like that. There might be another H in there. I don't know. And all I know about them is that they are, like, kind of off-the-wall fantasy books, and the Rethrough people are, like weirdly gender fluid and like with like hermaphroditic qualities. So I don't know. Like it looks kind of fun, but also a little weird.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if I'll like it, but that's my.
I like the author's name. I gotta say,
yeah,
Storm Constantine.
So hopefully by the next podcast. And by the time we actually got to where we were, like, in the last couple of weeks, like, I read Silas Marner, and that kind of helped break me out of feeling like I don't want to read anymore. So, Erin, what about you?
Well, let's see. I don't know if I talked about this book last podcast, but it was either the last time we recorded or just after I subscribed to the Audible Daily Deal newsletter. My credit card is kind of unhappy. But I have to say that I haven't regretted any of the daily deals that I've purchased. And I also went a little crazy during Audible's Treat Yourself sale. Last weekend was like a Black Friday, Cyber Monday kind of thing. And purchased a lot of books there. So I've been doing mostly Audible reading over the past month. The first book I read, it was actually the first daily deal I bought, called The Long Way Home. This author is got a pen name if I ever heard one, by Karen McQuestion.
Yeah.
That's a pen name if I ever heard one. But I have to say, I loved the book. It was great. And it was basically about a woman who's grieving because her partner, her live-in boyfriend, like not husband, you know, but they lived together for 14 years kind of thing, died. And she always thought he was just, you know, she worshipped him, kind of. I mean, not really, but kind of. And she always thought he was the most wonderful person, and he died, and she has this big hole in her life, because not only did he die, but his son moved away to live with his mother. And she had basically mothered this kid most of his life, and now she has this big hole, like I said, in her life, and she joins a grief counseling group. And members of this grief counseling group all of a sudden decide to go to Las Vegas on a road trip. And that was basically the book description that I had. And I bought it just on a whim. I thought, why not? But I didn't anticipate that there was going to be a girl in there who would see ghosts and talk to spirits, and that there was going to be this like love interest that pops up with one of the other characters. And that was, both of those things were complete bonus. I really did enjoy the book. It was a very light, fun read, and I've been reading a lot of really heavy stuff lately. So, for work and doing all that. So it was a very, nice thing to balance out the month. And, I really enjoyed it a lot. The next book, let's see. In the Audible Treat Yourself sale, I bought a couple books that I really liked, one of which I also bought on a whim because hearing Eloquence read the description was so incredibly funny. I just laughed out loud and I said, oh, I have to have this. A young adult book called Half-Blood by an author I've never tried, Jennifer Armentrout. And basically it's about, when the Greek gods were here, they ran around with all the humans, and this is a story told from the point of view of their descendants and their half-breed descendants who have basically watered-down blood. I guess this is going to be the first in a series. And this book, basically, they're fighting demons. And it's told from the point of view of a girl who has been training to fight demons most of her life, and then she realizes that she's a lot more powerful than she thought, or will be soon. And basically, it's stuff she finds out about her family and her mother. Basically, I'm saying basically a lot. I'm sorry about that. Her mother turns into a demon, which was really not a good thing. And it was a lot better than I thought, basically. I thought it was basically, here I go again. I thought it was going to be terrible. I thought this is going to be just the dumbest thing, but it was pretty good. If you like that kind of like superhero kind of thing. And there are, you know, male and female superheroes in the book. So, nice. You know, she's not just a girl who needs to be rescued. She is in training to become one of, you know, to fight off the demons. And it was good. Another treat yourself book that I bought was Kindred by Octavia Butler. And this is a time travel book. It was awesome. Everything I've read by her is awesome. I think I've only read one thing of hers that I was like, what? Most of the things that I've read haunt me to this day. I love her Parable of the Talents and Parable of the Sower, the Earthseed series. There were only two books. I wish there'd been a third. The first one was better than the second, but I just love them. They were one of my first tastes of dystopian literature. And this was no exception. It was not dystopian, but it was basically this woman who lives in present day 1970s America, and she's transported back into the early 1800s to the antebellum South, and finds out that her great great many greats, and she's black, and she finds out that her many many greats grandfather was a white slave owner. And that he is calling her when he's in need, unbeknownst to him, to help him, you know, when he's in danger of, like, when he's a kid, drowning, when he's older, starting fires in his house and burning his house down, that kind of thing. And she helps him throughout his life. And it's basically the conflict that she has between, well, she has to pretend like she's a slave when she's there. So right. Her conflict of trying to fit in, and then when she comes back to her own life, trying to live her own life. Her husband gets drawn into this as well. She's involved with a man, and he gets drawn into this as well. And since he's white, they have to pretend like he's her master. And it was really interesting to see how they fit in, and how when they came back to their own time, it was hard for them to fit back in, you know, to this time. Ooh. It was very good. And the last book that I want to talk about is something that I'm currently reading from Bard. It's my nonfiction read of the month, and I'm not done with it yet. It's called, I got to get the whole title here, Indie Spiritualist, A No Bullshit Guide to Spirituality by Chris Grosso. This was written by a very interesting multidimensional character. He is a punk rock musician who was addicted to all sorts of drugs. I mean, anything you could ever imagine. And how he has used mindfulness and various other spiritual techniques from various disciplines to pull himself out of that addictive spiral. I mean, you know, he went to rehab and nothing worked, I guess. And now he's just, this book is basically his musings on life and spirituality, and it's very real, very earthy. Don't be, please, if you're offended by strong language, don't read this book. And the first section is basically his musings about how he, you know, how spirituality has influenced his life. And the second portion of the book is practice, you know, spiritual practices that he uses or that other people use to be more mindful and present in every day. And so, since that's something that I'm trying to learn how to do, it's a good book. It's one of those things that you can put down, because each of the little essay thingies is not more than 10 pages long. I mean, that's the maximum. Most of them are like 2 and 3 pages. And it's really good. I'm really enjoying it. And I should be further along in it. But since it's the nonfiction, it unfortunately gets pushed to the back burner. And I don't get it finished as quickly as I probably should. But those are the things that I've been reading this month. Some of the things. There are other things that I've abandoned. But that's it.
I have that indie spiritualist on my Bard wish list. I should download it.
You should. And it's Michael Scherer, who does a pretty decent job.
Oh, he's a good one. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So, since we are talking about books and book things, we should probably talk about the news.
Ooh.
Book news. There's no good way to... I'm just not into the whole segue thing, so it just didn't work out. Let's see if I can get my news back. Where is it? Okay. No, I don't want my email. We were talking about dystopian fiction earlier, and it's very interesting to note that Stephen King's The Stand is going to be made into a 4-part miniseries. No, movie. Warner Brothers is going to cut a deal to remake it, because it was made into a miniseries in the 1990s. And Warner Brothers is cutting a deal to make it into a 4-part movie. Matthew McConaughey is possibly getting tagged to play Randall Flagg. That'll be interesting. And so we'll see what happens with that. I hope it is very much better than the miniseries.
Yeah, the miniseries was not good.
That was like a yawn fest. I was so, it put me to sleep. But then I read the book, and it was infinitely better, so we'll see.
Yeah, I think I saw the miniseries, like, on Netflix, a few years back, but it was totally a yawn fest. It'll be interesting to see what they do with it, and what they, like, what the differences are between, you know, the one they did in the 90s this one.
Mm-hmm. And I hope that the first one comes out. There's no release date set on when the first one's going to come out, but it may not be for next year, a couple of years sometime, but I'm looking forward to that one. Microsoft and Barnes & Noble are parting ways. Microsoft invested in the Nook in 2012. They invested $300 million. In the time since, though, it hasn't gone so well. A low point came with news of last year's holiday sales, which showed Barnes & Noble's Nook division plummeting from the year before.
Yeah, I keep hearing that things are just not looking so good for them.
And they announced in June a plan to spin off its Nook unit into a separate company sometime next year. And investors said yay, and Microsoft is saying no. It's selling its stake in Nook Media back to Barnes & Noble for about $125 million, a lot less than it actually bought it for.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's basically it. They're just not working. They're not playing nice anymore, which that, I guess, happens.
Yeah, a lot.
It does. So, a writer, Kent Harif, accomplished novelist of Small Town Life, is dead at age 71. I've never read a book of his, but he apparently had this small town in Colorado that he would write about, sort of made up small town, modeled on, I guess, a town that he grew up in. And it made him an overnight sensation. And I guess that the reason that I thought this story was so interesting is that he wrote blindfolded.
Oh.
When he sat down at his manual typewriter each morning so he could write blind, he pulled a wool scarf or something over his eyes to fully immerse himself in the fictitious small town in eastern Colorado, where he set a series of quiet, acclaimed novels, including Plain Song, a 1999 bestseller. And he often wrote a chapter a day most recently in the backyard of his home, and he wrote blindfolded, and I thought that was really interesting. Punctuation, capitalization, paragraphs, he really didn't care about that in the first draft. And when, of course, he wanted to do any of that, he would take off his blindfold. But the first draft was always done blindfolded. And I thought that was a very interesting, cool thing.
Wow, that is cool.
Yeah, so he could be completely involved in that. And he eliminated all the distractions of sight that would, you know, come in. Now, another writer who died a couple of years ago, but they're having problems with his estate. Maurice Sendak is, died a few years ago, and they're having various debates between his family and his housekeeper. She basically lived with him for 30 years or so. And she was appointed the administrator of his estate. And now they're turning his house into a museum. She actually kind of reminds me of Mrs. Danvers in Rebecca. Because apparently the article says that Maurice Sendak's bedroom is almost the same as when he departed this life, and she keeps it dusted and all the things in their places, and it sounded a little obsessive to me, but there you have it. But the family is questioning whether she is going to be able, with her limited knowledge of business affairs, to keep track of all the day-to-day running activities that are going to be involved in this house foundation museum thing. So we'll just have to see.
Yes.
Last and whimsically, Nigerian poet and novelist Ben Okri won the Booker Prize for his 1991 novel, The Famished Road. But this year, he has won a new award. The literary magazine, or no, the Literary Review, sent in an unmistakable message to authors at a ceremony in London. If you're going to write a sex scene, it's probably best not to mention rockets, symbolic or otherwise. The magazine awarded its 22nd annual Bad Sex in Fiction Prize to Okri, a man who did that with his latest novel, The Age of Magic. And I quote from the novel, quote, "She felt certain now that there was a heaven, and that it was here, in her body," he wrote in one safe-for-work section of the offending sex scene, all of which can be found on a link that, if I put it, I will put in the show notes. Quote, "The universe was in her, and with each movement, it unfolded to her. Somewhere in the night, a stray rocket went off." Quote.
Well.
That gives a whole new meaning to the rocket's red glare.
Yes, it does.
Or should we say her rocket's red glare?
Yes. Speak for herself.
Oh, my goodness. That's not in the quoted text, by the way. That's just me babbling. But, yeah. Sex and rockets, here we come.
Yes.
So, any newsworthy items that you found this week?
Not really. I think between the last recording and this, they finally resolved all the Amazon / Hachette shenanigans.
I think so, but I don't remember what the resolution was.
But I don't
was.
Remember what the details are.
I don't either, because it seemed like there were so many attempts at the resolution. And yeah. By the time it gets to us consumers, we're kind of like, we really don't care anymore, because y'all have been yelling and screaming at each other for months, and we just want our books.
Just give me my damn books. So, speaking of books,
yes.
we were talking about our topic for the day was books that we read in school, and so that's my attempt at a segue.
Yeah, there you go. And this month, we read Silas Marner. That was our homework for the month. What did you think of the book, since you had never read it before?
I had never read it before, and I liked it. I thought it was going to be a lot less engaging than it turned out to be.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, and there were a lot of circumstances to make it not very engaging, let me tell you. for example, the bard narrator was just not helping.
Yeah,
not helping at all. Like he did the accents. They were interesting. Like, I'm glad they got a British guy to do all the dialect stuff, mm-hmm. but it was sort of like every time he had a few minutes to be like where the text got a little boring, he just, you know, did not try to liven it up.
Yeah, he got boring along with the text.
He really did. So, and it was also not a very well marked up book, so it would have been nice to have had like chapter headings.
That, yeah, it would have.
But despite that, I enjoyed it a lot. I really liked I knew kind of the bare bones of the story, but I didn't really expect that there would be so many interesting characters, like, mm-hmm. besides Silas Mutter, mm-hmm. and the little girl he takes in.
Right.
It didn't go quite the way I thought that it would.
Oh, really?
So, well, I don't know how I thought it would end, but, when Godfrey and Nancy Cass come to, like, acknowledge Eppy's existence, mm-hmm. I totally thought that this is the point at which she's going to go off and, you know, be the rich heir to their estate or whatever. And she didn't. She married her gardener.
Right. Yeah, and I really liked that, and I think that George Eliot did something that a later author, Somerset Maugham, did in his book of Human Bondage, which I also reread, at least most of it, since it turned up on Bard, and it's like my favorite book of all time. But they both did something interesting in that, you know, it's like the poor people in the book are happy to be poor. And that's where they want to be. And it's not like they feel immediately that the rich people are automatically better off than they are and that they want to be them. It's kind of hard to explain. It's like,
yeah,
I'm happy with my station in life and I just want to be left alone to live my life and to live it, you know, as I see fit. And I don't think that because you're richer, you are automatically my superior and I have to look up to you and I want to be you in the future, you know?
Right.
In other words, you know, like a My Fair Lady kind of thing.
Right.
George Eliot did that. And I think when I first read the book, I was initially just as surprised as you were that it didn't end, you know, in the way that you described. She goes off to be heir to their estate and inherit the fortune. But I really thought that it was a very nice way to end it. And I especially liked the fact also that, you know, Nancy was able to forgive him his, you know, early mistakes,
right,
if you will. And
considering the kind of character that Nancy was.
I know. And that like, surprised me, too.
Yeah. Like, she's just kind of like, okay.
Whatever. And I wonder if it's something in the social mores of the time that was different than it is now. Because, I mean, now... back then, maybe it was common for young men, especially rich young men, to disport themselves with the local, you know, the local girls and for them to have buy blows, for lack of another word. Maybe it was just more common and people were more, the wives were more accepting of it. I don't know. But I was very surprised by how she accepted it because her, you know, her father and her sisters, you know, they were all very upstanding citizens and very, it seemed like devout, and that was the way she was, especially kind of at the beginning, so that kind of surprised me. But I think the biggest thing that I enjoyed the most was the way in which, of course, Silas Marner was able to, you know, take Eppy in, and the way in which she opened him up and made him kind of like interact with the community at large, because he needed to, you know, he needed help, and he was able to admit that.
Yeah, I really liked that too, and also I think that my other favorite part was I really loved Nancy's relationship with her sister Priscilla.
Oh yeah,
I thought that was like one of the sweetest. Like they weren't together for very many scenes, but like it was kind of, you know, like I just love that relationship between the two of them, where like Priscilla is just this obviously very coarse, not very pretty woman with her own with very strong opinions.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just kind of like, yeah, this is how I am. What are you going to do about it? And,
right.
And she, but she still like adored her sister, and her sister quite obviously adored her.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not like, you know, any like subtle competition or anything like that. It was really, really sweet.
Yeah, I agree. I think so too. So I thought that for the length of the book, in other words, it was really fairly short, but most of the characters were very well developed, and I really did appreciate that. And they were really multidimensional. I mean, you know, like Godfrey had his flaws. They all had their flaws.
They all had their flaws.
And they were all very human. And I thought, especially for that time, you know, when most novels were written in installments and huge and long, that especially for that time and in the space that she had, that she developed, you know, very multi-layered characters. And I really did appreciate that.
And I never felt like any words were wasted. Like I think we talked a little bit. I don't remember if we were recording or if we were like just talking, but you know, where you were saying that like eventually it got a little didactic and you just like fast forward. I never really felt like it did.
You know, when I read it this time, I didn't feel like it did either. It was just parts. Like a high school thing, but
right.
Yeah, but I mean,
there were parts that got a little like, oh, okay, we could do without that, George. But it was like, when I think about that, as opposed to like the Louisa May Alcott short stories I read a few months ago, where like, you know, like she was so. Like this is the moral we're going for, and now, children, I'm going to tell you about this for like 35 years before that we finally get the end of the damn story. And I felt like at least George Eliot spared me that. Like her morals were very clear, but I never felt like she was like now
preaching.
It's time for the lecture.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it never felt like she was preaching it. And I think, you know, I have a different opinion of it than I did in high school. And it was because I had to read the book and it, you know, I'm kind of like, hurry up with the story already so I can get this done, so I can write my paper. And now that I was reading the book for pleasure, I didn't notice that it was as didactic as I remember.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So all in all, consensus, glad you read it?
Yeah, definitely glad I read it.
Oh, good. Well, I hope I'm glad to read the next book, which is one that you picked.
Holiday book. Our holiday book, I picked it because the Seattle book club I'm part of is reading it on Tuesday, and the holidays are a busy time for everyone, and since it was my turn to pick a book, I figured we might as well go with something that, like, you know, wasn't going to be very long, and it's not. I started it today, and it is The Christmas Train by David Baldacci, who is a thriller and mystery writer that I've never read, although he's very popular.
Very popular. I've never read him either.
This is not a thriller or mystery. It's, you know, this guy basically ends up on a cross-country train trip from Washington, D.C., I think it is, to L.A., and he's a journalist, and he's kind of, you know, not very happy with his life, and, you know, of course, along the way,
I hope this doesn't turn into the Invisible Man book. What was it, Being Invisible?
Right. But he meets all kinds of interesting characters, and there's a little romance, and apparently it's supposed to be a like sweet, fun holiday story, and it's 7 hours long, so you can knock it off in like an afternoon.
I can knock it off in an afternoon, sped up.
Yeah. I mean, that's my plan. And like LJ Ganser is the one who reads it on Bard, and I think he's one of their better narrators. Like, I'm kind of sad that I don't get to hear him anymore on anything.
Mm-hmm.
I think he does. I'm looking forward to listening to him read. So we'll see.
Sounds awesome. I'm looking forward to it. And with that under our belts, so we know what our homework is for next time, we will give our contact details and encourage you all to write us with any book recommendations or listener commentary that you wish. It could be commentary on the news, news item suggestions, anything that you would like us to talk about, books that you would like us to read, and we will consider them. And to do that, of course, you can email bhapodcast@gmail.com or visit us on our website at bhapodcast.com or tweet us at Book Hoarders. So you've got a lot of options there.
A lot of options. And if you want to tweet us personally because you find the Book Hoarders Twitter account too intimidating, you can do that too. You can tweet Aaron at Aaron Edgar, and you can tweet me at Bardsong.
Awesome. And meanwhile, we will look forward to seeing you next time.
Next time. We'll
at this point,
talk about the Christmas tree.
Yeah, the Christmas train. First, I thought you said the Christmas tree. I'm like, wait a minute, that's not right. No. Yeah.
It's probably a whole different book.
Probably. So, at this point, we will simply say bye.
Bye.
To contact the Book Hoarders, send email to bhapodcast@gmail.com. Follow Book Hoarders on Twitter. And visit the website at bhapodcast.com.